Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Welcome to Social Distance Central, the show with the COVID name. It's not about COVID. During the COVID era, I'm Bick Nizar, and with me, the voice of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650, it is Brendan Batchelor. Batch, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. I'm fired up today with all of the game of take submissions we've seen over the last 24 hours. People are fired up, so it's going to be a good week on the show with game of takes coming up on Thursday.
It blew up. At Sportsnet 650, we'll put another tweet up for you to try to enter in. We've got a tough job tomorrow to try to sift through all these submissions of people who want to take on Bailey Broadbent in our for our topic this week, which it regards Jake Virtanen. So if you want to chime in, 650, 650, or also jump online at Sportsnet 650, because, man, we got so many, and more importantly, like, not just people replying, like, so many takes. And that's what this is all about. We're trying to find the best take of the week.
Yeah, and the takes ran the gamut, too, from why the heck are you guys asking this question, are you stupid, to the other end of the spectrum being that, yeah, you know what, maybe it is time to move away from him. Maybe they do need to prioritize their cap dollars. So people are emotional about it. People are opinionated about it. And that is exactly what we want to see on Game of Takes. So bring the fire with your takes over the next 24 hours, because we're going to choose someone to go up against Bailey tomorrow. And you need to stand out. You got to find a way to stand out if you want to be a part of Game of Takes. So put your thoughts together, throw them in a tweet or a text message. Let us know what you think.
And just to lay it out for you, the thing we're looking for here, the question we're asking specifically is, did he do enough this season to earn the new contract specifically with the Vancouver Canucks, or is it time to move on? And you can share your thoughts, 650, 650 at Sportsnet 650. We're going to talk to Greg Wyshynski in just a second when it comes to the NHL awards. He of ESPN, of course, and, you know, voting open now for the NHL awards, thanks to the conclusion of the regular season. We were talking before the show, Batch, and I'll pose this to our listeners as well. How many award nominations do you actually expect for the Canucks to get this season? I think the one obvious one is Hughes for Calder. But after that, it feels like you can come up with a few good cases, but how many are actually going to finish in the top three for those respective awards?
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation because, you know, I think this is a year where, based on your view of the team and your view of the players on the team, your answer could range from anywhere to, you know, anywhere between one and potentially five. I think that would be a little bit optimistic, because in that scenario, we would assume that Hughes is being nominated for Calder and Norris, that mm-hmm. Markstrom is being nominated for Vezina, and the award he was nominated for today, which is escaping my mind, the name of the award.
The Masterton Trophy.
The Masterton Trophy.
Yeah. Yes. And to be clear, he's Vancouver's nomination for it. He's not nominated for it yet.
No, every team nominates a player, yes, and then it gets narrowed down to the final three. So he could potentially be a finalist, though, for that award because of what he had to overcome with the passing of his father this year and the way that he was able to consistently remain a strong part of the Canucks and help them win games. So that's possible. But so we're looking at Vezina for Markstrom as well as Masterton, likely Norris and Calder for Hughes. And then you've got to throw Pettersson into that mix, maybe for the Hart Trophy, if you think five Canucks are going to finish in the top three. To me, that's not very realistic. I'm on the more conservative side, where I see it being two maximum. I don't think that we'll see three Canucks as the final nominees for NHL awards when we get there.
So the one that's obvious is obviously the Calder one.
Yeah, nobody's saying zero this year. Yeah. Quinn Hughes is going to be nominated for the Calder Trophy, and he is going to be in the running to win it. And that's, you know, not a debate. It's just down to whether he's able to get more votes than Cale Makar at the end of the day.
Now, I started the conversation back in January or February when you look at both Makar and Hughes, that they're not just having good rookie seasons. They're just having great seasons. Perhaps their names should be coming up for the bigger defensive award, the Norris. I would still be surprised if either got their name in that conversation. But when we look back at the voting at the end of the season, I think you would see both of their names in the top seven, in the top eight-ish, in and around there. Obviously, Yossi Carlson's probably going to run away with it. Hedman's had a great year. So many players have had great years, but I think their names are closer to that gap than people want to realize. It is Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor joining us now from ESPN. It is Greg Wyshynski as we get ready for some awards talk, but also some play-in talk. And Wish, you were one of the more vocal ones coming into the season about your declaration of the Vancouver Canucks making the playoffs. Do you feel vindicated? Like they're in the play-in round? Does that matter, or do you need to wait for them to make the 16 teams?
Oh, no, I'll claim victory. I mean, and obviously it went exactly the way that I thought it would go, which is that there'd be a global pandemic and a 2014 playoff. I made the prediction. It's interesting, though. You know, I heard you talking about the award stuff, and you know, a lot of us obviously the Hart Trophy, and I know the broadcasters for the Jack Adams do use playoff qualification as part of the equation. And I think it's interesting for those. There's a lot of Edmonton fans. Let's just be honest here. They get bent out of shape over the fact that, you know, Connor McDavid hasn't won Hart Trophies in the past because the Edmonton Oilers have been far outside of the. Now they're looking at this situation here and saying, well, how could you, like, vote for Artemi Panarin for the Hart Trophy when the Rangers aren't a playoff team? Well, the Oilers aren't a playoff team, technically, right now. The only playoff teams that we have, based on the definition by the National Hockey League, are the top four in each conference. Everybody else is playing for a chance to be in the playoffs. That's according to the National Hockey League. So if you wanted to get into a semantic argument here about who's in and who's out of the playoffs, it's only eight teams right now that are in. I don't want to have that semantic argument. I think it's dumb. I think if you are one of the 24 teams that is still playing right now, that the regular season is done and we're going to have a draft lottery and the whole thing, I think we can safely say that these are playoff teams. Personally, that's my view of it.
What's you know, like the semantic discussion is sports radio classic fodder of most valuable, and what does that mean in relation to his team versus the rest of the league? If you could restructure how the awards are done, would you keep it the same, or would you do kind of like the most outstanding type player for MVP?
No, I mean, I think we have that in the Ted Lindsay Award, right? Like, but Lindsay, from the player's perspective, is definitely the most outstanding player. In the past, it's been referred to as the player's MVP. I think for the most part, you could look at the voting and say it usually goes to the player who had the best statistical season. But yeah, I think there's a lot of hand-wringing over the Hart Trophy. But I mean, if you look back at the last 35 years or 40 years of the way that the award's been handed out, I mean, there are just certain standards that have been kept. And I don't think it's that confusing when you go by the dogma that's established. I mean, Mario won the award in a non-playoff year when he had like a billion points and the Penguins finished like a point out of the playoffs. I mean, if that's the margin, I think you can totally rope in somebody who's right on the playoff bubble and their team came up a win short of the playoffs. But, you know, making the argument in some seasons where a guy's team is like 13, 12 points out of the playoffs and that guy should be MVP. And I'm like, to what end? I think it's a pretty easy award to figure out if you just, you know, kind of use what's been established for what we're looking at. In the case of Dreisaitl and MacKinnon and Panarin, who I think might be my top three right now with Connor Hellebuyck sort of in that equation too, with what he did for Winnipeg. I mean, in Dreisaitl's case, he was the best player in the league this year. In MacKinnon's case, he's like 40 plus points ahead of the next leading scorer because his entire team was hurt all year. And in Panarin's case, you're talking about the best 5-on-5 player for his team, and the Rangers wouldn't even be, you know, in sniffing distance of a playoff spot were it not for him. So, I mean, it's pretty easy to figure out as long as you kind of keep consistent with your criteria, and I've tried to do that through the years.
Greg Wyshynski of ESPN with us here on Sportsnet 650, talking about that criteria. I have a ballot for the Jack Adams Award as a member of the NHL Broadcasters Association, and I found it more difficult this year, as you alluded to, because of that playoff line that is a little bit more gray than it normally would be. Is that something that, in thinking through the way you're voting, is a major factor for you in terms of some of these close decisions? Because you look in the past at head coaches that have found a way with a team that you know, has been injury riddled or whatever to find a way into the playoffs. That is sort of held up as a major accomplishment. But because the playoff line isn't where it normally is, there's a little bit more, you know, I did more research than maybe I normally would have this season because of things, the way things went. How has that impacted the way you're approaching your voting?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think in the case of the Hart and the Jack Adams, there is that sense of, okay, some of these teams have been sort of roped in by the NHL because that's what they decided to do. And it's not through merit necessarily, it's through numbers, right? Because they wanted to make sure everybody got a crack because their seasons were ended prematurely. So I think you do have to kind of factor that in. But you know, at the end of the day, it just comes to however you choose to interpret it. And I'm choosing to interpret it as a situation where if you're one of these 24 teams still playing, you're a playoff team. You're in the postseason. It's after the regular season. If in the case of some of the MVP candidates, I think that offers a little bit of clarity. In the case of the Jack Adams candidates, I mean, maybe it doesn't. You know, you still come down to the classic conundrums about the Jack Adams candidates, which is, you know, who made the most out of the least, who coached through adversity. I think that's kind of the Mike Sullivan and Jared Bednar kind of, you know, plan this year as far as the number of injuries they had to deal with. In the case of Bruce Cassidy, it's, you know, the top team in the league and a well-oiled machine after having gone to the Cup final last year. But I don't have a Jack Adams vote. I think if I did, the guy that I'd probably look at more than anybody is Alain Vigneault, because he has that argument for the Jack Adams that's pretty easy to make, which is that the team improved in the standings and almost every underlying metric for that team also improved after he took over. You could point to a lot of different areas, the Flyers, that are better now under Vigneault than they were last year. And, you know, he's had that effect in other places too in his first season. So I think there's a bit of history to it, and I think there's a bit of statistical backup that he might have done the best job of coaching this year.
And of course, we couldn't have awards talk on Vancouver radio airwaves without asking you your thoughts on the Calder Trophy race and how things might shake out. I know we've seen various polls out there over the past few weeks that have had Cale Makar ahead in that race. Certainly, there are many people listening right now that won't be happy to hear that. What do you think that decision may come down to in the end for the voters?
You know, if Makar's got the lead in a number of places, I think on The Athletic, I think on NHL.com, although those writers don't have a vote, at least it kind of gives you a sense of where their minds are. Makar has been winning these sort of straw polls for a bit. I think it comes down to sort of the highlight reel aspects of some of the things he does, and probably also to points per game. And then also just kind of the early season hype. I mean, Makar was hyped to the moon in the early part of the season with the numbers he was putting up for the Avalanche. So those are all factors that are sort of in play. I haven't made my pick yet. I lean Quinn Hughes. I think he's done more overall this season than has Makar. And then obviously there's sort of a games played aspect to it. And, you know, having watched a good number of Canucks games, the reliance that they had on Quinn to do a lot of heavy lifting in his rookie season, I think, can't be ignored. So I'm a lean Hughes guy. I still got to figure out the overall dynamic of those two. And the real intrigue is the third spot. I mean, this conceivably could be a season where we don't see a forward make the top three finalists for the Calder. I mean, you've got Adam Fox potentially for a three defenseman sweep of the finalist. Then you have, you know, a guy like Mackenzie Blackwood of the Devils who played out of his mind on a horrible team to keep them respectable. It's going to be interesting to see how that part of the equation shakes out, because I don't necessarily know if there's a forward between Olofsson and Kubalik that is necessarily better than either Blackwood or Fox.
Greg, I hate this argument so much. And you mentioned Drysdale's name, and we get the text, and we're like, oh, I can't believe he's in for it because he gets to play with McDavid. And I hate it, especially coming from this city when we tried yelling from the mountaintops that we have here in our region to the rest of the NHL world of like, appreciate the city because of how well they play together, that like teamwork matters. And, you know, do you account Drysdale's usage with McDavid in trying to make him a Hart candidate, or do you just look at him and say, wow, what a great season, he's put up a lot of points that should be recognized for on his own merit?
It's interesting, right? Like, I feel like it's an overrated aspect by some people outside of Edmonton, and it's an underrated aspect by people that are in Edmonton, from what I've been able to see. Overrated from people outside, because if you look at the numbers, Drysdale didn't play with McDavid all that much at 5-on-5, right? I mean, like, he's sort of made his own way on that team this season in a way that I think a lot of people, if they haven't examined the numbers, don't appreciate. That said, I feel like Edmonton fans have certainly downplayed the fact that Drysdale picked up as many points as he did playing with McDavid on a power play that was one of the best of the last 30 years in the league. Let's not forget. Okay. And that has to do very much with the ability to play McDavid on special teams, that I'm sure he picked up a fair number of points with McDavid in 3-on-3. So, you know, the idea that he is a product of McDavid, I don't necessarily agree with this season. The numbers don't bear it out. He did a lot of heavy lifting on his own. But the idea that he is somehow, you know, divorced from McDavid having contributed mightily to his point total, I think is a bit of a misguided idea as well. I will say this, though. The Oilers fans point to Dreisaitl and the span between him and McDavid in the scoring race, and then, you know, poo-pooing the accomplishments of Nikita Kucherov last year. Nikita Kucherov finished over 30 points, I think it was, better than Steven Stamkos last year. His season last year was insanely good. And I think the gap between him and the next guy in the Lightning eclipses the gap between Drysdale and McDavid this year.
And we also want to talk with you about the Vezina Trophy, which is something that will get some attention in this market here in Vancouver. Certainly, it looks like this is Connor Hellebuck's award to lose. But Jacob Markstrom had a very strong season for the Vancouver Canucks, obviously had some injuries late in the year, and there is a movement in Vancouver that he should be a nominee for that award, yet it doesn't seem like he's getting a lot of buzz for it around the league elsewhere. Where do you see Markstrom fitting into that conversation after a year where the Canucks really relied on him a lot? I think they gave up the fourth most shots per game in the league, and yet we're still in a position where they were battling for a playoff spot when the season was paused.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I mean, I think he had a real special season for them. I think he was a stabilizing force for them. It'd be great to see him get that recognition. I just don't know if it's necessarily going to happen. I mean, you know, the Vezina Trophy, obviously voted on by the general managers. I think in the last awards watch that we had at the beginning of the month, Hellebuck was, of course, number one. I think he should win this thing in a walk. Tuukka Rask's numbers are outstanding. It wouldn't surprise me to see him get the second in the voting. And then you have sort of Vasilevskiy, Darcy Kuemper, who had a really good season, although didn't have a lot of games played because of injury. And then Ben Bishop, who is sort of always in the mix for this award, being there as well. So it's a crowded field, but if Markstrom snuck into the top three, I think he'd be completely validated because of the season that he had.
We're asking our listeners today, how many award nominations do you expect Canuck players to get? So if I gave you an over-under of, say, 1.5, are you taking the over or you taking the under?
1.5. So who'd be the next guy? You guys get a Selke? Is Jay Beagle going to win the Selke?
Probably not. I guess the closest nomination for that would probably be Pettersson.
No, I don't think Pettersson's going to sneak into the Hart top three, even though I think there's a case to be made for him. And I don't think that Quinn's going to sneak into the Norris top three, because once you get past Josi and Carlson, that's probably Hedman's spot, just based on recent history. I would probably take the under. I think Quinn, obviously, you know, either will get nominated for the Calder and probably could win it. But I don't know if there's another guy in the mix that necessarily is going to sneak up to grab an awards nomination. I think Markstrom deserves a lot of attention. I just don't know if he necessarily has the same level of recognition amongst the GMs that some of these other guys do. I mean, you know, Vasilevsky winning last year, and Rask is a proven commodity. We'll see, but I would probably, as a betting man, take the under on that one.
Could you see Markstrom sneaking in for the Masterton? Had to overcome the passing of his father mid-season, left the team at one point to go back to Sweden. And certainly we've seen some great nominees from around the league released earlier today, I believe. But is there a chance he sneaks in for that one and moves it up to the over?
It's possible. It's possible. It's funny. I actually just did my Masters and vote this morning when the ballots came out, and I had perused all of the stuff. It's a pretty crowded field. You don't have a lot of people like the one year, like the Winnipeg writers had to nominate Andre Pavlik and been like, well, he didn't quit hockey or something. I mean, this is like nonsensical nomination sometimes for this award. It's a crowded field. My winner was Bobby Ryan. I put him first. I think his story has been well chronicled, not only this season, but in past seasons, and sticking with hockey, all things considered, I think is been a really commendable thing. Steven Johns was on my ballot, an over a year long battle with concussions and coming back to play. And then the third spot is pretty crowded. And I think Markstrom could fit there. I think Lindblom could fit there. I think Bomeister could fit there. It's an award where there's obviously a ton of different criteria, a lot of it personal. It does tend to end up being the Lifetime Original Movie Award, where the most striking and dramatic story tends to win. There's a lot of interesting candidates for that award this year, but I think Bobby Ryan's story, to me, having covered him for many years, is really compelling. And it's hard to, I mean, it feels like it was 17 years ago now, but it's hard to think about the season without thinking about that moment where he had the hat trick and got the ovation from the crowd.
He is Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. Wish, thanks a lot for giving us some time here today, and take care.
Anytime. Thanks, boys.
Thanks, Greg.
Obviously a great follow on Twitter at Wyshynski, and just always a pleasure to speak to him. We want to expand on that idea of how many nominations the Canucks could be getting, because our friends over at Reach Deep, yesterday, we're talking about, we've talked about Markstrom, Quinn Hughes, Patterson. Wish brings up Jay Beagle for Selke. as ludicrous as that is, our friends at Reach Deep brought up another name yesterday. We'll talk about that on the other side. Plus,
we're putting them on blast.
Yes.
So make sure to stay tuned for that.
And plus, I want to circle back on that Markstrom conversation, because it feels like he is far from the conversation, but statistically, he should be a lot closer to at least getting a nomination. We'll discuss that on the other side here on Social Distance Central on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's put our hands together for the stylish.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the eighth wonder of the world, the flow of the century. Oh, it's timeless. Ho! Thanks for coming out tonight. You could have been anywhere.
Social Distance Central, Bick Nazar, Brendan Matchler on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. We're going to get into a conversation about Jacob Markstrom's merits as far as the Vezina Award voting goes. But if you missed it yesterday on Reach Deep, they were talking about Jim Benning's qualifications to be a finalist for Executive of the Year. And I want to make sure I get this tweet word for word here. It's a very short tweet, but from Dan Riccio, at Dan Riccio 650. The Miller trade alone puts Benning in the conversation.
Yeah.
And of course, we're talking about the JT Miller trade.
I not so respectfully disagree.
We love Dan Riccio.
But
you need more, like a trade, a nomination does not make.
No, and especially a trade that we can't, really give a final verdict on yet, because Who knows whether the Canucks are giving up their first round pick this year or next year? Who knows whether it could be a lottery pick or not? And not to take anything away from JT Miller, who was
he's been fantastic,
hugely impactful guy for the Canucks this year. He's not their MVP, in my opinion. I know that conversation was out there yesterday, too.
The Canucks did win the trade, but it's not as if they...
Well, we think they won the trade, right?
Yeah. Like, but okay,
So let's say everything, you know, goes the exact opposite way you hope. They lose to the Minnesota Wild. You know, they keep their pick this year, but it's, you know, a middling pick, like out of the top 10. With where things fall in the lottery. And then next year, hypothetically, they have an awful season and suddenly they're giving up a top 10 pick in this trade. Then the conversation changes a whole lot. And not that I'm expecting that to happen, but I'm using that scenario to illustrate the point that we can't just close the book on that trade yet.
Sure.
And you certainly can't be winning or willing to give Jim Benning an award as the best general manager in the entire league on the strength of just that trade. Now, there is a conversation to say that, you know, Jim Benning could be included in that discussion. He's been the general manager for the Pettersson draft pick, for the Hughes draft pick. And those guys are going to be big parts of this team for years to come. But at the same time, when you're talking about general manager of the year, to me, you're talking about success right now. And as much as the Canucks have taken strides, you know, there's no guarantee they would have been a playoff team had this season carried forward as it was going to. And there are some pretty good candidates from around the league that, you know, to me are more deserving of being in that conversation, not to take anything away from Jim Benning. I think the Miller trade will be proven to be a great decision. I definitely think he's a guy that over the next few years could be in the conversation to win that award, especially if we see the Canucks take big strides in the right direction, you know, are a bona fide playoff team next year or are able to win a round or two this year and really continue to develop their young players. But for right now, a guy like Jarmo Kekäläinen is a name that really jumps off the page as someone who essentially had his core disintegrate and found a way to keep his team competitive.
Yeah, like the depth of the Blue Jackets, and it did rest a lot on Merzlikins to bail them out at times, but the overall depth of the team is a credit to Jarmo Kekäläinen to survive that path. The other thing with it's like I'm not even sure if he's in the conversation just because, you know, when we make the case for, you know, Quinn Hughes and in the idea of getting a Norris nomination or being a Norris finalist, you know, top five to me is in the conversation. Jacob Markstrom for Vezina in the conversation. I just felt like trying to go through a bunch of names here when it came to general managers. Like I got 6-7 names and Jim Benning's name hadn't even cropped up for me. It's not as if the Tyler Myers move was such a success. I was a fan of it, and I think, okay, it's lived up to some of the billing, but it's not as if it's blown everyone away by what value they got. I think best case scenario, you kind of broke even so far on that kind of trade. And even with the JT Miller trade, it's you won the trade, but you've paid a severely high price to win that trade. For big acquisitions or moves that we look back and say, wow, they really got good value on it. It's, you know, do you trade a semi-busted prospect to gain a really functional NHL player? Do you trade a mid-round pick and found money elsewhere? When you look at, you know, the way Kevin Cheveldayoff, you know, makes a big high-risk trade-off to trading Jacob Trouba, but, you know, Neil Pionk absolutely produced for them. They also, you know, went through all these changes on their blue line. And sometimes, credit to Chevy, you know, the inaction has worked out for them. Yes, Connor Hellebuck has bailed them out, but they've managed to have a pretty successful year, 80 points in 71 games. And they can say all the things that they've done to build up to now has worked out for them.
Well, and another thing, too, is, you know, much like we were talking about the Jack Adams with Greg Wyshynski, this is an award that, you know, depending on what you think, you might have a different criteria. So, you know, yes, someone that made a splashy trade in season or within the last year that helped their team, some people might look at it that way and try to find the GMs that did the most appreciable work, I guess you could say. But at the same time, you look at someone like Don Sweeney, who has been able to keep the Bruins a top level team for multiple seasons here. You know, that shouldn't go unnoticed just because maybe there wasn't some major big splash that you can serve.
Having patience should be somewhat rewarded, right? We look at it as moves, right?
Or understanding when you've got the right pieces in place and not tinkering with them. Like, inaction is sometimes more important than action. And you're right. You know, you and I were talking about this at the break, coming up with names of who we thought, you know, could potentially be more deserving than Jim Benning. We've mentioned Kekalainen. We mentioned Sweeney. You mentioned Cheveldayoff. What about Gorton in New York and bringing in Artemi Panarin?
For sure.
Fletcher in Philadelphia, hiring Alain Vigneault, who is, you know, a candidate for the Jack Adams Award.
Which, like, you know,
these are just a few of the names that, in my mind, and not to take anything away from what Jim Benning's done, because he has made some good decisions, and as we've litigated time and time again on this show, has made better decisions more recently than he did earlier on in his tenure with the Canucks. But like, he's in the top 10, but he's not in the top 5 for me.
No, absolutely not. Vic Nizar, Brendan Batchelor. We didn't want to talk about Jacob Markstrom, just because, you know, in that conversation with Greg Wyshynski, I kind of agree with Wish, just the idea of, okay, Hellebuck's going to win the award. The next guy is probably Tuukka Rask. But going through it and just looking at goaltending in general, like, I think the case for Jacob Markstrom is really, really interesting. And you kind of alluded to it. It's like, not a lot of goalies saw the amount of rubber he did and still managed to put up pretty good stats. I know his save percentage, you know, really sparkling at .918. And it's not necessarily among the leaders, but, you know, some guys who were backups have had really strong seasons, like Antti Raanta, Jake Allen, Tristan Jarry came on late. Yeah. So, you know, he's in the top 10 of quote unquote starters. But when you consider degree of difficulty, man, like, it, that to me shoots him up in the conversation. I don't know if he's going to get the third one, but, you know, when we were doing our poll question, his Vezina nomination was one I was considering. I still ultimately take the under, but I think it's a lot closer than people realize.
And again, Bic has his our poll question, I should say, up on his Twitter account at Bic650. How many award nominations do you expect the Canucks to get? 1, 2, 3, or 4, and 1 is winning the vote right now with 44.1%. And that is where I fall as well. And not to say that Jacob Markstrom hasn't had a great season, and not to say that he's not worthy of being in the conversation. I just don't think it's going to happen. You know, as we talked about with Wish, Connor Hellebuck, you know, is essentially the odds-on winner to be the Vezina Trophy winner. Tuukka Rask, deserving of being there. And there are other names, you know, Wish threw out Vasilevsky, Kemper, Bishop, all guys that are in that conversation. I don't necessarily agree with Kemper just because of the amount of time he spent out of the lineup. And if I was casting a vote on this award, I would be looking at guys that, you know, in a shortened season like this, played at least 40 games, I would say, if not more. But you look at Bishop, who's a guy who's been in consideration for this award in the past. You look at Vasilevsky, who has put up some great numbers playing on a very good Tampa Bay Lightning team. And, you know, as much as Markstrom is appreciated within this market, and rightfully so, the buzz just isn't there around the league. So, you know, will he be in that conversation? Sure. Will he get some votes? He'd better. But does he crack the top 3? I don't even know if he cracks the top 5, to be honest, with some of the other names that are being thrown out there around the league.
And I want to bring his name up in another conversation as well. I saw this in the Game of Takes tweets, which, by the way, you can jump in on at Sportsnet650, at Batch Hockey, and at Bic650. If you want to enter for this week's Game of Takes in conversation with Jake Virtanen. But Tanbeer mentioned something just in relation to Jake Virtanen, but it kind of speaks to a bigger conversation when it comes to Jacob Markstrom. But he was essentially saying that, you know, you should prioritize Virtanen over certain guys like Tanev, like Pearson, like Stetcher, maybe even Toffoli, you know, factoring Jake Virtanen's age at 23. And I want to play kind of a game show with you, Batch. So here's what we're going to do. I want you to prioritize how you are going to, or when you are going to converse with Canuck players that, you know, you have decisions to make. So we know the free agents, right? You know Markstrom, you know Toffoli, we know Tanev, we know Stetcher, Virtanen, Goddard, McEwen, all those guys. So you cannot talk to any of them, or you haven't talked to any of them. And who do you talk to first?
Jacob Markstrom. Okay, so that of a doubt.
So I think he leads this one easily.
Yeah.
Now, just to follow what Tammy was saying, it's like, do you prioritize someone over Toffoli second?
I don't. I think Toffoli's the second priority because he has the largest likelihood to have a big impact with this team. And this is an organization now that, whether you agree with it or not, feels like this is their time to push. They wouldn't have acquired Toffoli if they didn't think that. Their time to maybe not be a contender quite yet, but to start, you know, working their way into that conversation. And of all the remaining players, you know, Chris Tanev has been a warrior and a soldier for this team. But, you know, how much does he have left in the tank? How many years does he have left? You know, how much longer is he going to be a consistent top four option? Mm-hmm. All of those things remain to be seen. And to be fair, I put him next on the list at third and a close third. So I do still think, especially with the right side of the blue line, that's an important thing that they're going to have to address going forward. But, you know, top six wingers don't grow on trees. And the fact that you have one as a part of the group that has gelled well already with some of your top players and had success, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't a lot of the time. And you're going to have to pay a premium for guys like that if they're out in unrestricted free agency. So to me, Toffoli is a guy that you really have to try to get under contract, potentially at the expense of guys further down the list.
So I'm with you. It's those two guys, one and two. But you mentioned Tanev as your third, right?
Yeah.
So actually, Tanev is my last one.
Interesting.
I'm even more on the line of, unless there's a serious reduction off of 4.45, I just say, hey, thank you. Like, we appreciate everything you've done for the franchise. And I don't really care about the term of the contract. It's the financial aspect of the contract that worries me the most. And, you know, we've had this conversation when it came to Vertanen, and that's why I found that the question of prioritizing them so interesting. It's, while I'm pro exploring the idea of trading Vertanen, when you're listing your priorities of how you solve the free agents or the decisions you have to make on the roster this year, I did significantly prioritize Jake much higher than Tanev, just because I feel like you can't pay PK defenseman $4.5 million, especially when your emerging star in defense probably can play on his own. He probably doesn't need that safety blanket. And I feel like we're overvaluing that now. And I don't feel like we need to be in a situation where you're allocating that kind of money for that style of D-man.
So here's my counter to that, is the right side of defense is arguably the position that the Canucks need to maintain or improve the most on their hockey club.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the Tyler Myers contract, and that is what you're looking at for a top four right shot defenseman on the open market. So if Chris Tanev is a shorter term option at less money than what you would have to pay to go and get, you know, the equivalent of another Tyler Myers to fill out your top four, then you're actually saving money, even if it's a little bit more than you'd be comfortable with paying, to have someone that can slot into that role that you trust, that you know is going to lay his body on the line. And also, and you know, some people might shake this off as not that big of a factor, but we see all these stories about all the young guys, you know, going to his house for dinner and calling him dad and stuff like that. Like, that's something inside the dressing room that you have to put a value on too, that this is a guy who has taken some of the Canucks' key young players under his wing and is trying to mentor them. And, you know, that's something that I don't think you just want to be comfortable walking away from. On the other side of the spectrum, if we're doing a comparison between Tanev and Jake Virtanen, then I look at things and say, okay, for the position for Tanev, if you're signing him, it's going to be less money than what a top four right shot defenseman would cost. When you look at the bottom six forward group, you've already got a lot of dollars allocated to that spot in your lineup. And yes, Is money being spent on Louis Erickson and Brandon Sutter and Jay Beagle money well spent? The argument is there that it's not, for the large part. And they may be able to get out from underneath some of that money, which will help them in this priority or this ranking we're doing, being able to retain more of these guys that are on this list. But assuming all things remain somewhat equal, to me, you can afford to let a guy who produces offense in your bottom six go. You can't afford to lose a top four defenseman, especially on the right side right now.
Well, I think the biggest fear driving this is people are really scared to see Quinn Hughes and Tyler Myers play together. And I'm far less concerned about that. I'm encouraged that, you know, statistically, based on some of the underlying metrics, I know it didn't necessarily look as good, but based on the numbers, they dominated on the puck. Like, they created the Canucks created the most when they were together. And they're both offensive style D-men, I get it, but you know, we were so blown away by Quinn Hughes' defensive game overall. And I, not that, that's going to be his responsibility, but if these guys can play less defense together and create, then I'm less concerned about them playing together. Is it going to look a bit wonky at times? Sure, but they're going to be creating so much offense. That's how you, like, the reward of it is matches the risk of it. And actually, far goes beyond it to me.
Yeah, so I agree with you there, but then who's playing with Alex Edler?
Well, that would be Troy Stetcher, right?
So you're going to, because Stetcher is one of the guys that's on this priority list as well. And I'm of the belief that from a Canucks perspective, he is quite low on this priority list, that he is a guy that they feel they can part with. So if you're looking at Troy Stetcher in a top four role, Jake Virtanen staying, or let's say, just for the sake of argument, the other option is Chris Tanev staying and both of those guys leaving, you are on the side of the Virtanen and Stetcher being retained, correct?
Correct. Again, this is, that's kind of complicating the issue because it's not white and black, right? It's not, because you can reallocate your, for someone we're talking about with Jake Virtanen, like, I'm of the belief his value is a lot higher. Could you work some pieces around to get yourself that top 4 D-man? And so Troy Stetcher isn't that guy you're talking about. But just as it stands right now, I'm prioritizing Stetcher returning higher than I am prioritizing Tanner returning.
Yeah, I'm not on that side of the argument. And I know that Stetcher is younger and cheaper. But when it comes to someone that could fit in your top 4, to me, that's Tanev. And again, I don't think that there is a built-in replacement for that spot within the organization right now. Troy Stetcher is a good NHL defenseman. I don't know if he is a top four NHL defenseman night in, night out consistently. And we get this text in from Joey in Richmond, who's more on your side of this debate, Bick, where he says, remember when everybody thought Mark Methot was the bee's knees shutdown partner guy for Eric Carlson?
Right.
Yeah, that's what we've got going on with Tanev. I like him and want him back, but you can't pay him more than $4 million, I feel.
And when you look at D-men across the league that are making basically 4.5+, they're all of them are either power play contributors or point getters. And that's just, you're paying a premium for something you don't need. It's like paying the wing backs in soccer batch. It's your team doesn't get built to win by having shutdown D-men at that price. It's important, but they have to put up points. They have to if they want a certain contract. And
the counter to that,
he's not.
The counter to that argument, though, is that the Canucks are not a team that is yet in that spot where they are contending, and so they do defend a lot, and we saw that this year where, you know, I brought up the stat earlier. It's one that I go to quite a lot, especially when trying to evaluate the value of Jacob Markstrom, but it could also be applied to evaluating, you know, the important defensive defensemen that play in front of him and block shots and things like that, that, you know, they gave up a ton of shots and they relied on Markstrom a whole lot. So if you take a guy like Chris Tanev, who is known for his defensive game, who is known for his fearlessness and willingness to block shots and sacrifice his body to help his team win, I don't know if you can afford to get rid of that just yet. So, you know, if for example, Chris Tanev comes in and he wants a long-term deal at the same or more money than he's making as a guy that's, you know, now into his early 30s, that is a conversation that I'm not willing to have. But I can't imagine there would be much of a raise, if any, to be honest. And, you know, even if there is a raise, it would be marginal. And I can't imagine that the Canucks would be willing to sign him long term. And it does seem like he wants to stay. So I don't necessarily know if that's going to be a hurdle that they're going to have to clear in contract negotiations with Chris Tanev. To me, he's still such a valuable part of this team, both on and off the ice, that it's not time to let him go just yet. You know, is this conversation a little bit different if we're talking about Jake Virtanen being another legitimate top six option? Then maybe it is. But he's not there yet, in my opinion. And, you know, we could debate whether he'll ever get to that point.
A lot of reaction coming in, 650. This one saying unsigned text, like, what if Tanev goes back to missing 30 games? And look, like, that's the reality of this whole situation. We appreciate all the texts you've been getting in. We will try to continue this conversation tomorrow. A lot more coming up here on Social Distance Central. Reach deep on the way. More awesome takes from Dan Riccio and Randy Janta. They are just minutes away here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.